This is part three of Truth and Knowledge by Rudolf Steiner, and I'm beginning with part V, or part five, called Cognition and Reality. Concepts and ideas, therefore, comprise part of the given, and at the same time lead beyond it. This makes it possible to define what other activity is concerned in attaining knowledge. Through a postulate, we have separated from the rest of the given world picture a particular part of it. This was done because it lies in the nature of cognition to start from just this particular part. Thus, we separated it out only to enable us to understand the act of cognition. In so doing, it must be clear that we have artificially torn apart the unity of the world picture. We must realize that what we have separated out from the given has an essential connection with the world content, irrespective of our postulate. This provides the next step in the theory of knowledge. It must consist in restoring that unity which we tore apart in order to make knowledge possible. The act of restoration consists in thinking about the world as given. Our thinking consideration of the world brings about the actual union of the two parts of the world content, the part we survey as given on the horizon of our experience, and the part which has to be produced in the act of cognition before that can be given also. The act of cognition is the synthesis of these two elements. Indeed, in every single act of cognition, one part appears as something produced within that act itself, and through the act, as added to the merely given. This part, in actual fact, is always so produced, and only appears as something given at the beginning of epistemological theory. To permeate the world as given with concepts and ideas is a thinking consideration of things. Therefore, thinking is the act which mediates knowledge. It is only when thinking arranges the world picture by means of its own activity that knowledge can come about. Thinking itself is an activity which, in the moment of cognition, produces a content of its own. Therefore, in so far as the content that is cognized issues from thinking, it contains no problem for cognition. We have only to observe it. The very nature of what we observe is given us directly. A description of thinking is also at the same time the science of thinking. Logic, too, has always been a description of thought forms, never a science that proves anything. Proof is only called for when the content of thought is synthesized with some other content of the world. Gideon Speicher is therefore quite correct when he says in his book Lessing's Weltanschauung, Lessing's Worldview, page 5, quote, "We can never experience, either empirically or logically, whether thinking in itself is correct," unquote. One could add to this that with thinking all proof ceases, for proof presupposes thinking. One may be able to prove a particular fact, but one can never prove proof as such. We can only describe what a proof is. In logic, all theory is pure empiricism. In the science of logic, there is only observation. But when we want to know something other than thinking, we can do so only with the help of thinking. This means that thinking has to approach something given and transform its chaotic relationship with the world picture into a systematic one. This means that thinking approaches the given world content as an organizing principle. The process takes place as follows. Thinking first lifts out certain entities from the totality of the world whole. In the given, nothing is really separate, everything is a connected continuum. Then thinking relates these separate entities to each other in accordance with the thought forms it produces, and also determines the outcome of this relationship. When thinking restores a relationship between two separate sections of the world content, it does not do so arbitrarily. Thinking waits for what comes to light of its own accord as the result of restoring the relationship. And it is this result alone which is knowledge of that particular section of the world content. If the latter were unable to express anything about itself through that particular relationship established by thinking, then this attempt made by thinking would fail, and one would have to try again. All knowledge depends on man's establishing a correct relationship between two or more elements of reality, and comprehending the result of this. There is no doubt that many of our attempts to grasp things by means of thinking fail. This is apparent not only in the history of science, but also in ordinary life. It is just that in the simple cases we usually encounter, the right concept replaces the wrong one so quickly that we seldom or never become aware of the latter. When Kant speaks of, quote, the synthetic unity of apperception, unquote, it is evident that he had some inkling of what we have shown here to be an activity of thinking, the purpose of which is to organize the world content systematically. But the fact that he believed that the a priori laws of pure science could be derived from the rules according to which this synthesis takes place shows how little this inkling brought to his consciousness the essential task of thinking. He did not realize that this synthetic activity of thinking is only a preparation for discovering natural laws as such. Suppose, for example, that we detach one content, A, from the world picture, and likewise another, B. If we are to gain knowledge of the law connecting A and B, then thinking must first relate A to B, so that through this relationship the connection between them presents itself as given. Therefore, the actual content of a law of nature is derived from the given, and the task of thinking is merely to provide the opportunity